Welcome back to Fantasy Baseball Disrupted with a comma and an uppercase D. It is March 26th, 2024. I wanted to talk about, just kind of put a final touch on my thoughts on the draft and hold NFBC strategy, how it changed because of forming it when I was drafting in November and the landscape changed, and so it changed. So essentially, just to recap, it was draft hitters heavy first, like really heavy, like don't touch a starting pitcher until Christian Javier around 165 or Carlos Rodon, or back when Chris Sale was going there in the 170s, and then go hard, you know, get Christian Javier, then Bryce Miller, then Brian Wu, then Ryan Pepio. This was all when they weren't sort of 15 picks from each other, and I could get them with 3-4 picks in a row, those young guys, Bryce Miller, Pepio, Wu, and then I would, I have some shares of Giolito, unfortunately, but I had Darvish, you know, in the 220s, something like that, and Kenta Maeda, Nestor Cortez, and then later on, I would get Alek Manoah, Jack Flaherty, Luis Severino. Two out of three of those last three look like they're, I don't know, it's spring, but you know, look like they're healthy, which is a big factor for both of them, and their stuff is better than certainly last year. Somewhere in those first 13, 14 rounds, get two closers. Now, that's a change I made as the draft went along, because, to be honest, I realized that to win the overall, my strategy wasn't going to work. Now, I don't think I'm going to win the overall, but part of my money is going toward winning the overall prize in a draft champions, and so, you know, that's what you're shooting for. That's what you should shoot for. Is this fucking Burger King closed? It said it was open. This is the only reason I'm out here. Son of a bitch. And so, you know, previously, before drafting closers, I would get a whole bunch of, you know, 14 setup men, right? Nick Anderson, Colin Poche, Andrew Kitteridge, Jason Adam, you know, Raldis Chapman, etc. Oh, they better be open, dude. Joel Piamps, Kevin Ginkle, etc. And I ended up with a good amount of those guys. John McMillan was kind of a dark horse guy I liked. At any rate, two of those last three guys that I just mentioned are going to be the closers, or at least have a partial share of the closer role while closers are out. Nevertheless, that's only going to net me about 40 saves, having 14 setup men in my experience and in my estimation. So I wanted to get two closers and then also get some setup men, but not quite as many. And so with those two closers, I'll obviously get a much higher, presumably, save total. And that will allow me to use maybe six roster spots for starting pitchers, instead of six more setup men. So basically, instead of 14 setup men, I want to get two true closers and eight setup men. Maybe even fewer. In the scenario in which I have two closers, now I can get 16, 17 starting pitchers. The reason, as I get that deep in the draft, there's a point in the draft around 350, I don't know, when, or maybe 310, when there are still starting pitchers I want to take a gamble on. Like a Luis Severino and Jack Flaherty, you know, this is back in February. But there are no backup hitters or no hitters I want to take a chance on that will pay off. You know, like a, maybe a Jake McCarthy and a Johan Rojas are about the last, you know, potential, not impact bats, but, you know, good starters that I want to take a chance on. And I don't really mess around with prospects who aren't good enough or close enough to be, you know, in the top 200, like Wyatt Langford or Churio. And they were going around 150 before spring training. So it's not like I don't want 10 hitters on the bench or 14 hitters on the bench. They're just not good enough that to draft. That coupled with the fact that I see there are a plethora of post 300 starting pitchers that I think are useful. Just off the top of my head, a few that are anywhere from useful to potentially a top 40 arm. Tyler Wells, Dean Kramer, I never thought he'd be great, but I thought he would be useful in getting wins and potentially having decent numbers, at least at home. But like a Dean Kramer, Tyler Wells, like I've mentioned, Alek Manoah, still have faith he'll produce at some point. Aaron Ashby, I know he got sent down. Jack Flaherty, Luis Severino, Max Meyer, I was still going late as recently as a week ago. That's after he was sent down in the minors, but I think we all know he's going to throw at least 80 innings in the major leagues. You know, it's not a ton, but that's at least. And, you know, guys like that. Whereas, again, the hitters aren't that valuable, and I have such good hitters. I've drafted so heavy and everyday hitters who can contribute or hold serve in 4 to 5 categories in the first 14 rounds. I expect to get 11 or 12 hitters. Everyone else has, I don't know, 7, 8. I have 11 or 12. They're all in good lineup spots. Nobody, I don't have any 8 hitters. I don't have any 7 hitters. I have younger hitters. I have a Tristan Casas, Kristen Encarnacion Strand, Noelvi Marte, obviously, before he got suspended, Ellie De La Cruz. I have a lot of, I guess that's risk. I mean, these are blue chip guys who proved it in the pros last year in one way or another, in a great park, in a good lineup, with excellent minor league numbers. I don't think it's a big risk to have taken Noelvi Marte at 160. Well, sometimes I was taking him at 140 just to make sure I got a guy who could potentially go 20-30. He's out. And I'm somewhat thin, but here's an underrated aspect that obviously everyone knows about, but this position eligibility. I have leagues where I have Gunnar Henderson dual eligible, shortstop and third, and it's not so much that, yeah, the, you know, they'll cover each other at each position. It's I can put them at either, you know, middle infield or corner, and the domino effect allows me to, maybe not have to draft, you know, a third second baseman from my middle infield spot. Although I usually end up getting like a Johan Rojas. No, I'm sorry, Josh Rojas is what I meant this whole time. Josh Rojas at second and third, although it looks like his playing time will be cut pretty significantly with Jorge Polanco. But I was drafting him when it looked like he was going to get at least regular at-bats before a trade or before a promotion. And it allows me to not really need, like, everyone knows position eligibility and the flexibility there, but if you play it just right and you play out the scenarios, you can have, you know, one or two of any position go down, you know, except for catcher. And you can be covered by a smaller number of players who just have on your bench Josh Rojas plus, you know, Mauricio Dubon, draft Byron Buxton. You know he's going to get outfield eligibility, and he's being drafted as if he's just a util guy who's going to play 30 games. You know, he was being drafted, I don't know what he is now, but in the 220 to 280 range, or 260, 270 range, something like that. And just taking advantage of every little thing. Now, one thing I want to talk about that did change, aside from getting closers instead of 14 setup men, is I didn't adjust to this, but as the months, or I'd say weeks, went on from early February into mid-March, pitchers, I'd never drafted in November before. And I started my draft this year, drafts in November and December, January. And I was just getting every pitcher I wanted, like, and starting in the 170s range, 160, 170 range, like I said, with Christian Javier. And, but I guess it was suggested to me that guys like Nestor Cortez, Yu Darvish, once they just showed up in spring training and were healthy, that starting pitching in general, but also guys whose health was in question at the end of last year and showed up healthy would get pushed way up. I mean, I know about spring training performances and how it affects, but I didn't know that. I thought people just said, oh, Nestor Cortez hurt at the end of the... Like, it's just kind of assumed that if he was supposed to... You know, if it was an injury that was supposed to get him healthy at the beginning of the year, that it wouldn't be that big of a bump to see him pitch one or two games and look healthy. Like, we expected Nestor Cortez to be healthy. You know, there are always setbacks, but the expectation is that somebody with not that serious of an injury, obviously not a TJ or a UCL or, you know, forearm strain or whatever, or, you know, that they're going to be healthy with the 6 months of, or the five or so months of off season and rehab, etc. And so there was a big bump for guys like that. Nestor Cortez was going in the 280s. I couldn't get those, that cluster of Bryce Miller, Brian Wu, and Ryan Pepio anymore. They started going real close to each other. Pepio was going around 210, I believe. Brian Wu was going before Bryce Miller in the 180s, and Bryce Miller was going in the 190s, and I just couldn't get them anymore, all three of them on a team. And I look back at my early teams, and it's awesome considering I went so hitter early, hitter heavy early. And I ended up with kind of backup starting pitchers. So, like, instead of those three, I ended up, one of those would be Tristan McKenzie. And the other one would be, you know, Nick Lodolo in one instance when it looked like he was on track for opening day. I don't love Nick Lodolo. The park he's in, his track record, he's got strikeouts, but throwing strikes. And then Kenta Maeda. And, you know, I ended up with, in draft and hold leagues, in mid-March, I ended up with about five of the nine arms I was used to getting all on one team, or eight or nine of those guys. And the replacements I wasn't exactly enthusiastic about. It's not that I don't like Kenta Maeda at 240, 250. It's just that when I'm drafting around, 215 to 230, I already have my hitters, you know? And if there isn't a hitter, I already have about 12 of my hitters. And if there isn't a hitter I really want to take there, the closers are basically gone there, and I end up having to reach if the next best pitcher, you know, in my ratings is Kenta Maeda, I end up having to reach and not really getting great value for that pick, potentially, in my estimation. Although I think he'll be a top 200 player, I really do. I think the Tigers will win 85 games, their offense will be a little bit better, and it's a good park, and he doesn't have any innings restrictions, except for, of course, age. But, you know, that's what I would say. I would say I would get two true closers.
And if you had to just get, you're getting such an advantage when you're drafting hitters early that if you get 10 hitters out of your first 13, 14 picks, I think that's all right, as long as you're getting, you know, the right starting pitchers instead of getting 11 or 12 hitters in the first 14 rounds, and making sure that you do get your starting pitching, because the margin for error, I've been told there's not a lot of margin for error in my draft strategy. I mean, that's simply wrong. It's just, it's hard to get across a point that has three or four domino effects to someone else if they're just, one, unwilling to understand it, and two, they just don't understand it. Like, you can't benefit from my strategy if you don't understand it, if you can't understand it the first go around, and if you don't try to afterwards. Excuse me. But there is, during the draft, a thin margin for error, in that you are starting late. So if there's a pitcher run, or if pitchers, you're starting late drafting starting pitchers. So if there's a pitcher run, or you notice pitchers are going earlier, or they're getting pushed up more than you thought they might, because of spring performances, or I guess just being showing that they're healthy, then you got to adjust. I didn't quite adjust, and like I said, you know, I got about 5/8, so what's that, less than 63% of the sort of 8 or 9 guys that I usually target to get, like, in a row from pick 170 to 300, somewhere in there. And so I would say, if you miss two of them, now your margin for error during the season is going to be thin. And I have two teams where they are kind of thin. The good news is, both of those are fab leagues, and I just got lucky that they are fab leagues, because I didn't really change my draft strategy for them being fab leagues either. That's something where I get in a mode and just obsess over how to maximize, you know, my resources and take advantage of the variables in one particular type of league. And then I switch over to, it's still, you know, NFBC, but it's a totally different type of league. It was the TGFBI and the, and an online auction championship. And so, yeah, whatever. You got to get your pitchers. You got to make sure that you got to notice who's being taken, even if they're not your guys being taken. If other pitchers, a glob of other pitchers are being taken, you have to notice that, so that because then your pitchers are going to be next in other people's queues more often than not. So that's just a couple of things I've learned. Really tired. Wish I could do 1,000 more drafts and not have to set the lineups, because I know how to knock it out of the park during the draft anyway, but I can't. Just have to do it next year and keep building and building. Alrighty, that's it.